That Senator Brownback invoked the phrase community standard is no accident. He's referring to a key part of the Miller test, the Supreme Court's legal definition for determining whether speech or expression can be labeled obscene. But perhaps the surest way to gauge community standards is to run afoul of them, which is what magazine publisher Larry Flint did in the mid-70s in Cincinnati, Ohio, where he faced down a local anti-pornography committee, and again in New Hampshire in the 1980s, and again in the 90s back in Ohio. Most of Flint's employees would swiftly come and go through the turmoil, but one man managed to stick around for nearly two decades. Alan McDonnell worked his way up from deckhand to editorial captain of Larry Flint Publications and has written a memoir of his voyage. It's called Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine. McDonnell says that around the office, one thing never changed.
There's not anybody who worked for Larry for more than 3 or 4 weeks who didn't do an imitation of him. It was just, you cannot resist it.
How did you end up at Hustler?
I wanted to write. I wanted to be a paid writer. And I live here in Los Angeles, and it was one of the few things that was open to me. I'd kind of crapped out of college. Plus, I really liked the stance of the magazine, where you could do whatever you want and say whatever you want.
Now, you developed a real talent for critical invective, which you employed to excellent effect as a triple X movie reviewer for one of Flint's subsidiary magazines. And I think one of my favorite lines of yours quoted in the book was when you referred to a director's effort as a, quote, talky, pretentious blop of slop, a cancer on the body of sleaze.
I had a lot of fun with that stuff because our goal was if the movie was really boring, well, then make the review at least more interesting than the movie. And it was kind of somewhat futile because, I mean, who read them? You know, no one read them and no one kept them. Certainly, there's not going to be a collection of my porn reviews ever put out, you know. But later on, there's a column in the magazine. It was set right up in the front of the magazine. And the title of it was, you know, a bodily orifice that considered like a synonym for jerk. So it was this bodily orifice of the month. And that column was just pure invective, and it was written in the foulest language, but with very solid logic exposing, like, hypocrisy or some kind of double dealing or just really bad behavior on the part of some kind of public figure. And I felt I was born to write that column.
I think for the sake of accuracy, let's call that feature A-hole of the Month, which is closer to what it's actually called. This was a real prime example of how Hustler related to media stars, to celebrities.
We didn't have to worry about pleasing any publicists because no celebrities were going to appear in our magazine or endorse our magazine. So we had a free hand to basically take the air out of these people, you know, in a way that no one else really does.
Now, that was Hustler's position because, as you say, no publicist was going to work with you anyway. Do you think that was also the perspective of your audience? How do you see your average reader?
You know, he's either in prison or he's in junior high, you know. So think of someone kind of like you. And by you, I mean me and the people I would hire. Like, at any time, I would have a staff of 8 or 10 people, you know, men and women. You know, as kids, they'd loved Mad Magazine. They'd loved, like, the early National Lampoons. So generally, there are people who came in with this sort of skewed perspective on what the mass culture was presenting to us. I read Mark Twain religiously from the age of, like, 10 or 12. And he had this kind of viewpoint all the way through. So I've got to assume that it's a standard American audience, because Mark Twain was a very popular writer. And so there's this kind of an American...
actually comparing the oeuvre that, if you look back over the issues, Hustler might comprise to that of Mark Twain?
When I would read Mark Twain, like the things he would say about politicians, and the excellent misanthropy, I mean, the way he pointed out these negative characteristics in everybody, that kind of thing is what I'm saying. We were a continuation of that kind of satirical bent.
As you note in the book, Larry Flint seemed to go in and out of the day-to-day management of the magazine based essentially on his pain level, his health, his various surgeries. Mm-hmm. How did that affect you when you became editor?
Well, initially, it was kind of rough because he was very heavily medicated, probably for my first 2 or 3 years. But then Larry, he met his nurse named Liz. Through her influence, he went into a rehab and he got off the drugs. And he came back and he announced that now that he was clear of the drugs, his primary focus would be on restoring the edge to Hustler. And people just looked around and kind of smirked at me like, you're dead, you're gone. But somehow Larry and I, we ended up bonding because I had, before he came back, I had run it on his template. You know, it's the whole chip on your shoulder kind of deal.
And it probably found its fullest expression during the Clinton years. That was the magazine's crusade in the run-up to President Clinton's impeachment.
What we set out to do was to prove that the Republican legislators who were waging this so-called moral crusade against Bill Clinton had just as many moral failings, if not more. And what we did is we went trolling. We put an ad in the Washington Post and we offered $1 million to anyone who could come forward with proof validating that they had had an adulterous affair with a high-placed government member. We didn't specify whether Republican or Democrat. And we placed that ad on a Sunday, and on a Monday, we had about 8,000 responses. We hit pay dirt.
A couple of times.
Well, the biggest one we got was the Speaker-elect, Bob Livingston from Louisiana. He eventually resigned because we insinuated that we had information on him having affairs.
Which you didn't actually have.
We had nothing on Livingston. What happened is we got one phone call, and they said, this is the phone number of Bob Livingston's girlfriend. And the woman, she's told us to, you know, go mind her own business. And then she hung up on us.
And with that indicting evidence, you insinuated that Livingston was having an affair and he resigned, thus apparently proving your point.
Within an hour and a half, Livingston was given a press conference saying he'd been Larry Flinted.
What will you do now?
What will I do now? About 3 weeks after I got fired, I was looking on Media Bistro, seeing what kind of jobs were available. And they had an interview with Art Cooper, the longtime GQ editor. And he was talking about the time when he had been at Penthouse, because he ran Penthouse for a short time. And he said the sign that came to him that he had to get out of Penthouse was when another magazine came along, a disgusting magazine called Hustler. And he knew that he had to move on. And when I read this guy, he was being inducted into the Magazine Hall of Fame, referred to my entire resume as the disgusting magazine called Hustler, I knew I was going to have some opposition to, you know, overcome.
What do you think would be the perfect job to follow this one?
I'd like to move into radio.
Really?
I think I'd be pretty good in radio, yeah. Yeah, they took in G. Gordon Liddy. They took in that the Marine who sold
Oliver North.
Arms to Oliver North. There's room for me in radio, I think.
The media employer of last resort, perhaps.
Maybe.
Well, welcome to the biz, Alan.
Thank you.
But before you go, tell me, how did you get fired?
Well, I was drafted to perform at a roast of Larry Flint. And I did not get the memo that by roast they meant tribute. And I went in there and I did a pretty stiff roast. And within about 2 or 3 months, I was out.
Alan, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You've been kind to me.
Alan McDonnell is the author of Prisoner of X, 20 Years in the Hole at Hustler Magazine.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, and Mike Volo, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director and Jennifer Munson, our engineer. We had help from Mark Phillips and Ani Katz. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Bydell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.